Hello, and welcome to our program, Reader's Digest, brought to you by Owl Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center in San Antonio. I'm John Fisher, and during the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from Reader's Digest here on Owl Radio. First, a story of national interest. The next healthcare crisis could prove disastrous for patients and rural hospitals. Here's Where Have All the Nurses Gone? By Adam Puare in Reader's Digest. Sometimes Carla Thielen just wishes she could explain that she could plop herself down by her patient's bedside, look him in the eye, and explain that she does care and is not ignoring him. That she just has to intubate a guy down the hall and the woman next door fell on her way to the bathroom. That she has 4 missed calls on her cell phone from another patient's daughter who just learned her dad is dying. That she hasn't eaten all day or had time to use the bathroom. But Thielen, who as a traveling or contract nurse has worked in more than 30 hospitals across the American West over the past decade, knows she can't do that. It wouldn't be professional or compassionate to walk into a room and tell a patient that the hospital is woefully understaffed, that she has more on her plate than any one nurse could possibly handle, that, quote-unquote, this is why I'm late, I had to deal with this situation, that COVID-19 has pushed a system already plagued by chronic staffing shortages to the brink. So she stays quiet and plows ahead, and at the end of the toughest days, she sits alone and asks herself the same question many nurses are asking themselves nowadays. How much longer can I keep this up? Thielen, who lives in rural Montana, got into nursing in the year 2009, she says, so she could help people navigate the most uncertain or frightening times of their lives. Caring for someone, quote-unquote, stripped down into those vulnerable places of actual suffering, Thielen says, makes her feel more human, resets her, and makes her life feel meaningful. You're connecting on a very elemental level, she says. For me, it has always brought me back to really the essence of what it is to be a human. It's vital to my existence. But lately, the job and the feeling that she is failing her patients has become unbearable. It's not being asked to work hard, she says. It's being asked to do something that's impossible within a 12-hour shift. The fact is, in America today, there simply aren't enough nurses. Those who have stayed on the job are being asked to care for more patients than is safe for both the nurses and the patients. In September, the American Nurses Association, the ANA, which represents the nation's 4.2 million registered nurses, sent a letter to Secretary of Health and Human Services Xavier Becerra calling on him to declare the current, quote-unquote, unsustainable nurse staffing shortage facing our country a national crisis. As ANA President Ernest Grant explained in a news blast to the media, the nation's healthcare delivery systems are overwhelmed and nurses are tired and frustrated. Even before the pandemic, burnout was bleeding the nursing field of some of its most promising talent. Of the more than 418,000 registered nurses who quit their jobs in the year 2017, 3 years before COVID hit, more than 30% cited stressful work environments and inadequate staffing. By December 2020, at COVID's height, 60% of nurses surveyed said that they suffered from burnout, and a survey in early 2021 indicated that 30% considered quitting their jobs or leaving the profession altogether. These departures added to a shortfall that has been brewing for decades, one that is only expected to get worse. By the year 2030, more than a quarter of the nation's roughly 4 million registered nurses will likely retire. This at a time when transformations in the field of healthcare and an explosion in the nation's elderly population will require a net increase of an estimated 500,000 new positions. In that sense, COVID simply provided a glimpse of a worst-case scenario, a preview of what we can expect should we fail to head off the impending crisis. In Texas, hospitals are staring down 23 unfilled registered nursing jobs, prompting state officials to launch an effort to recruit 2,500 nurses from outside the state. Louisiana had more than 6,000 vacant nursing positions even before the Delta variant hit. Mississippi has lost 2,000 nurses since the pandemic began, while hospitals in Tennessee are down 1,000 staffers. In Georgia and Oregon, the situation became so extreme that officials were forced to mobilize the National Guard to assist in hospitals. In small rural hospitals, particularly in the South and West, the situation has been catastrophic. Tyler Williams, president and CEO of Habersham Medical Center, a 53-bed hospital in Demarest, Georgia, says the nursing crisis had already begun to affect his institution prior to COVID. For years, his hospital has hired nurses fresh out of nursing school to staff its ranks, offering the opportunity for entry-level training in lieu of the higher salaries seen at larger institutions. But around the year 2018, the larger facilities began hiring nurses just out of school too, paying an additional $3 an hour. And since the pandemic began, Williams has lost a fifth of his nursing staff, as those bigger hospitals have been luring them away by doubling their hourly rates and offering signing bonuses as large as $30,000. There's just a shortage all around, Williams says. We can't keep up with that. The end result? Americans are likely to see higher medical costs as well as increased financial strain on smaller rural hospitals, which could lead to a reduction in the number of available beds. This is the perfect storm, warns Rhonda Manivel, Executive Associate Dean for Academic Nursing at Pace University in New York City. The nursing shortage is here, and it's going to continue to grow and become more acute, leaving people in our communities without enough trained professionals to meet their healthcare needs. Public health officials have been warning for years that the United States is facing a demographic time bomb, which some have called a gray tsunami. By the year 2030, every single member of the baby boomer generation, estimated at 73 million strong, will have reached retirement age, more than doubling the number of Americans over the age of 65 at the dawn of the millennium. These elderly adults are going to need a lot of health care, much of it complex. Meanwhile, the average age of American nurses has risen to 51, and the anticipated retirement of a million nurses comes at a time when the healthcare system is in the midst of a transformation that will require more nurses to face that gray tsunami. The positive news is that many young Americans want to become nurses. Indeed, enrollment in nursing programs has been growing every year for the past 15 years, and today the United States is graduating more nurses than at any point in history, with nursing schools having doubled their output over the past 15 to 20 years. And for good reason. The average starting salary for a registered nurse straight out of college is $54,790 per year. Here's the catch. There aren't enough nursing schools to educate enough students to fill the projected 1.5 million nursing slots that will need to be filled by the year 2030. In the year 2020, a total of 80,521 qualified applications were not accepted at schools of nursing, primarily because of shortage of faculty, classroom space, and clinical sites, which give student nurses much-needed real-life experience outside of the classroom. It's a complex problem, says Pace's Manivel. It's a complex problem, says Pace's Manivel. We're not educating enough nurses at the baccalaureate level. But even if we did, we don't have enough faculty in graduate programs because it's not an, quote-unquote, attractive career. Many nursing schools are turning to adjunct instructors, whose average starting salary is only $8,000. The educational bottlenecks are just one cause of the nursing shortage. Linda Aiken, who heads the University of Pennsylvania's Center for Health Outcomes and Policy Research, says burnout is a far greater factor. She notes that about a third of all nurses are not working full-time, and she blames working conditions. Incentives in the marketplace could easily pull more nurses in, Aiken says. Nurses are very responsive to market incentives, such as better compensation and flexible hours. Yet instead of trying to lure nurses, she argues, many hospitals are driving them away by cutting corners, either in the number of nurses on shift or in the support personnel who would allow units to move smoothly. How bad is it? In one pre-COVID study, Aiken and her colleagues surveyed most of the registered nurses in New York State, asking them how many patients they had taken care of in the previous day. She found that more than 40% of hospitals were understaffed, which she defined as nurses caring for more than 4 patients. Some were taking care of more than 10. Such low nurse-to-patient ratios lead to burnout. In the 2 months prior to the 2020 pandemic surge, Aiken found that 50% of the nurses in New York State hospitals were already experiencing high levels of stress because there weren't enough nurses and support staff to shoulder the load. But more than being a morale buster, low ratios can also be dangerous. The most important thing nurses do in a hospital is act as a quote-unquote surveillance system, which means they are trying to project who's going to develop a complication before it happens, Aiken explains. When a patient is in distress, it's often the nurse who is the first to notice, sound the alarm, and call others in to save a life. But if you don't have enough nurses, you have no surveillance system, so you don't identify impending problems early enough to correct them, she says. She cites one study that looked at more than 74,000 Medicare patients who suffered from common conditions, such as congestive heart failure, pneumonia, strokes, and infections. They discovered that patients in understaffed facilities had higher mortality rates and higher readmission rates and were more likely to suffer from sepsis and infections than patients in fully staffed hospitals. Of course, nurses do more than heal the body. Carla Thielen has found that in well-staffed hospitals, she has plenty of time to assess patients thoroughly, check their vital signs, attend to their personal hygiene, like washing hair and brushing teeth, and change bed linens. More importantly, she has time to connect with patients. Over the years, patients have confessed love affairs, talked about the children they had given up for adoption, and confided that they always wanted to be a painter or that they had regretted not having kids. Others just looked her in the eyes and told her, "What I know now is what's really important. Now, time to connect with patients is a luxury." A fix won't be easy, but in its letter to Health and Human Services, the American Nursing Association called on the agency to, quote-unquote, convene stakeholders to identify short and long-term solutions to staffing challenges. Such solutions would include, quote-unquote, payment equity for nursing services, presumably as a way of overcoming geographic disparities in pay that are likely to hit rural hospitals in the South and West harder than others. Many have suggested that the federal government expand programs that provide aid to nursing schools in the hope of luring more faculty. Others would like to see mandatory nurse-to-patient ratios to lessen burnout. California is the only state that currently has them. But all these solutions will require money. And whether the political will exists to appropriate the extra money to implement these solutions or to impose new requirements on hospitals remains an open question. Thielen and her colleagues recognize that working conditions aren't likely to get easier anytime soon. Even so, for now, she has no plans to leave the profession. Though serving as the face of a healthcare system that is failing to meet the needs of patients is a painful reality, Thielen still has glimpses of why she loves her job. Recently, she sat with a COVID patient who'd been intubated for 3 weeks and had awakened to learn that during his time in a medically induced coma, his house had burned down, killing his beloved dog. Thielen found him lying awake in the middle of the night. She quietly shut the door to his room and sat by his bed as he wept. "It's the shared moments when you have the time," she says. "All of a sudden, you're in the moment with somebody, taking care of their needs, helping them. You don't think about what their politics are. You don't think about how they're dressed, where they work, how much money they have. Working as a nurse is a beating, such a beating. Yet I'm compelled to do it because of those moments that are so good and so rich." Now moving on to another type of champion, here's everyday heroes in Reader's Digest, a pair of them. First, Sydney Page from the Washington Post. As the lost hiker grew desperate, a stranger with an unusual pastime was trying to rescue him. Here's Screensaver. Rene Compion was no stranger to Angeles National Forest. He'd hiked the park near his home in Southern California numerous times. But after venturing along a new path last April, the 45-year-old mechanic was lost. As the day faded into dusk, following several hours of aimless roaming, his concern turned to fear. The terrain was remote and rugged. With no flashlight, only a liter of water and a power bar in his backpack, the less than 10% battery remaining on his cell phone, Compion was unprepared for anything more than the 2-hour trek he'd planned. Compion climbed to a spot, some 7,000 feet above sea level, where he found at least one bar of signal. "SOS, my phone is going to die. I'm lost," he texted a friend, attaching a photo showing where he was. The shot showed his soot-stained legs hanging over a steep cascade of rocks. All Compion could do then was wait and hope. The temperature was dropping fast, and the winds were whipping. Dressed only in a tank top, shorts, and a hoodie, the hiker was chilled to the bone. He hugged himself into a tight ball, using his backpack to shield his bare legs from the frigid gusts that pounded him. But he wouldn't sleep. After spotting two mountain lions and a bear, he spent the night on high alert, keeping a big stick and some sharp rocks beside him in case an animal came close. 60 miles away in Ventura County, Kim Kuo was working at home when he read a tweet from the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department showing a grainy image of a man's legs. The sheriff's search and rescue teams had spent the previous night unsuccessfully looking for Compion, so they released the photo to the public, hoping someone might know the location. Kuo, then 47 years old, works in the tech industry, and he has an unusual hobby. "I have always loved looking for where photos are taken," he says. He frequently tries to identify where movie scenes, television shows, or commercials were filmed. He's often successful. When he saw the blurry image of Compion's legs surrounded by an endless landscape of rocks and vegetation, he instinctively pulled up a satellite map on his laptop. The sheriff's department said Compion's car was parked near Buckhorn Campground, so he narrowed his search to the surrounding area. "There's an amazing amount of information you can get from satellites," says Kuo. The first thing he noticed in Compion's photo were patches of greenery. After comparing it to the satellite map, Kuo realized something. He's got to be on the south side because there's not really any green valleys on the north side. That finding tightened his search, leading him to an area that resembled the terrain in the image. The final step was cross-referencing the original photo with 3D images of the area from Google Earth. The locations matched. He quickly called the sheriff's department with the latitudinal and the longitudinal coordinates supplied by Google Earth. Soon, a search and rescue team helicopter was in the air, hovering above Compion. After spending 27 hours alone in the wilderness, Compion cried, "I'm safe." Days later, the two men met via Zoom, where they made a plan to meet in person. "Maybe we'll go on a hike," Compion joked. Getting serious, he told Kuo, "I owe you my life." Sergeant John Gilbert of the Sheriff's Department agrees. Copian's story probably would have ended very differently had a total stranger with strong satellite skills and a sharp eye for detail not taken action. Ben's help allowed us to get to that location much sooner than we probably would have, Gilbert says. In fact, when Compion was finally pulled safely into the helicopter, one of his rescuers, unable to yell over the din of the rotors, wrote on a piece of paper, "You are so lucky." And the second in our pair of everyday heroes in Reader's Digest, this from Andy Simmons, here's The Book Lady. It was Jennifer Williams's mother who got her hooked on books. A librarian, she read to her three children every day. "Not until we went to kindergarten," Williams told VADogwood.com, a local news site, "until we went to college." When Williams, now 54 years old, became an elementary school teacher and tutor in Danville, Virginia, she wanted her students to fall in love with reading just as she had. But early on, she realized that some kids had limited access to books. "It's very obvious to readers of young children which kids are read to versus kids who are not," she said. "It's obvious to the end of the first day of school." To Williams, the solution was simple. Give kids books. In the year 2017, as part of a civic event called Engage Danville, she gave away 900 used children's books over 3 days. "Most people would be satisfied with that." "Most? I was like, anybody could do that," she said. "I wanted to do something that's going to stretch my faith, my work ethic, my everything." So she raised the ante considerably by setting a new goal for herself. Give away 1 million books. It sounds like an unreachable number, but as Williams posted on Facebook, "Don't complain in the bleachers if you aren't willing to work hard out on the field." So she got to work, first by roping in friends to donate books or money to buy books. Before long, as news of Williams's project spread, strangers started leaving bundles of books on her front porch. As quickly as the books come in, Williams gives them to local schools, free of charge, and also supplies books to little free libraries around the city of 41,000, just over the North Carolina border. She also hosts a book club for inmates in the local jail. In the 4 years she's been doing all this, the Book Lady, as Williams has come to be known, has given away more than 78,000 books, only 922,000 more to reach her goal. And she's not slowing down. It's too important for kids with few options. "Reading can take you anywhere," she told CNN. "You can travel in time and space. If you can read, you can learn almost anything." Next in Reader's Digest, we found a fix. Here are 8 helps, hacks, and how-to collected from RD.com, TasteOfHome.com, FamilyHandyman.com, and TheHealthy.com. Number 1. Put your plastic cups to work. If you find yourself playing bartender at a cookout or tailgate party, use the lines on those red plastic cups to help keep the good times flowing. The bottom line indicates 1 ounce. That's a modest shot of liquor for a celebratory round or cocktail measurement. The second line from the bottom is 5 ounces. Hello, a crisp serving of wine or summer sangria. The third is 12 ounces, one cheer for one beer, please. And for the teetotalers, 1 ounce of grenadine, 5 ounces of Sprite, and some ice mix to make a refreshing Shirley Temple. Number 2, a hairdryer that won't blow it. Why ruin the peace after a morning shower with the racket of a blow dryer just because a towel dry won't do the job in time? Fold that time in half by wrapping your mane not in a cotton towel, but in a microfiber one. It will wick away moisture 40% faster. Number 3, flight tracker. For all you iPhone-owning jet-setters, message your airport pickup the airline and flight number, for example, Trusted Airlines 1922, then your ride can tap on the iMessage text to automatically open a flight tracker displaying takeoff and arrival times, terminal and gate assignments, and even flight status to anticipate any delays instead of waiting in the dark of the cell phone lot. Number 4, permanent tiki torch holders. Wrestling tiki torches into the ground only to pick them up after every stiff breeze? Here's a sturdy solution. Grab PVC piping from the hardware store and cut it into 5-inch lengths with a handsaw. Drive pipes into the grass until the openings are ground level, clearing away any dirt inside. You can slide torches in and out with ease, and they'll withstand the wind. Number 5, a new twist on an old favorite. Before placing bacon on a baking sheet to cook it in the oven, hold each strip vertically and twist it. Turning the strips into twists guarantees ultra-crispy bacon every time. No more gnawing through the floppy sections to get to the treasured crunchiness. Plus, it's a space saver that allows you to fit more on the pan. Number 6. Shine a light on broken glass. The next time you break a glass, not that we're betting against you, we're just betting on gravity, get all the big pieces out of the way and then cut the lights. Shining a flashlight at floor level will make even the tiniest shards glisten. Then you can gather them with a wet paper towel instead of the bottom of your foot. Number 7. Pay off your mortgage faster. Certified personal finance counselor Andrew Latham suggests a smart way to get ahead on your mortgage. Make payments biweekly instead of monthly. By paying half your monthly mortgage every 2 weeks, you'll sneak 13 payments into a year, helping pay off principal faster and decrease overall interest. On a $200,000 mortgage with a 30-year term and 5% interest rate, it can save $34,724 in interest and repay the mortgage nearly 5 years early. And finally, number 8 of We Found a Fix in Reader's Digest, putting on the tire pressure. Some say there's a direct link between tire pressure and the blood pressure of drivers across the country. When you neglect to check one, it actually raises the other. So in addition to checking your tires monthly, inflate them to the recommended PSI listed on the carmaker's decal found on your driver's door jamb or in the owner's manual, not to the PSI printed on the tire. Tire pressure is based on the weight of your vehicle, not on the tire brand or tread style. We're getting close to the end of this edition of Reader's Digest. Let's cap it off with some quotable quotes. First from athlete Naomi Osaka, "Life isn't based on the tennis game I play. It's little things. Saying hello to everyone you meet. That's more validating than whether I win a match." From journalist Al Roker, "If you want something badly, keep at it until it's yours. Don't stop because you think you tried hard enough or believe it's not going to happen. Don't make those assumptions." From comedian Amy Schumer, "Listen to your body. I listen to mine, and every day it tells me not to do Zumba." From actor Vince Vaughn, "I was raised with the idea that you could have different beliefs and you should defend that in other people, not shout it down. The people you disagree with most, you should stand up for their right to do that." From writer Ursula K. Le Guin, "You cannot buy the revolution. You cannot make the revolution. You can only be the revolution. It is in your spirit or it is nowhere." From basketball player Kevin Garnett, "I didn't want to be something cool. I didn't want to be calm. I wanted to be a player that made you say, 'Did you see that?'" From poet Amanda Gorman, "I look at fear not as cowardice, but as a call forward, a summons to fight for what we hold dear." From singer Tim McGraw, "Blind faith is not true faith. Asking questions and constantly dissecting faith and still having faith, that represents a truer faith." And finally, from the actress Melissa McCarthy, "The real key to happiness? Step 1, marry your best friend. Step 2, always, I mean always, have a plethora of wigs in your home." You have been listening to Reader's Digest on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program is replayed after 9 o'clock in the evening. This is John Fisher saying goodbye from Owl Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center in San Antonio.